and on the weekends, and it's a lovely community down there. So, so long, Marianne Miller. This is 99.5 FM, WBAI, WBAI.org on the web. Oh, my goodness, we thank you all very much, so very much, for tuning in and staying with this station. We're going to be talking to you about how we keep this radio station ours, our radio station, yours and mine. Thank you so much. It's 12 noon. Coming up next, The Gary Null Show.
New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. From the Uniformed Services University of Health Sciences, we're going to learn about how the omega-3 fatty acids helps kids with high cholesterol improve their lipid profile. That's important. Fatty acid supplementation could fend off later heart disease in high-risk children, and that's a lot of children. Lives saved. That's what we do. I have a lot more on health and healing, all from peer-reviewed journals. But then today, from my perspective, we begin a campaign in real earnest. This is this program's pushback and stand out and take an issue against the woke generation, identity politics, book burnings, censorship, especially for those on the left. This is something that's just abhorrent to those of us who grew up with the classical liberal view that you are for freedom of speech, even if you don't like what someone is saying. You're for open discussion and civil debate. You're for standing up and protesting what you believe is wrong with any institutional policies, government or private industry. And yet, as you will hear from all the speakers coming up over the next 2 weeks, and these are the deepest thinkers I personally know, and I've been on the phone with some real inspired people who tell me that if we don't stand up now, then it's no longer some people with what we consider irresponsible ideas, such as, well, you can't say mother, you can't say father, you can't say brother and sister, you can't say grandparents, you know, grandmother, grandfather, you can't do that anymore because somehow that's offensive and we're all going to die if we say it. The insanity of this mindset. So today I'm going to face these people, and I hope that others do, because it's one thing for them to believe anything they want. They have that right in our country. I support that right, even if I challenge their views. It's another thing when they're coming out of college, going into industry, taking that heavy, heavy indoctrination without critical thought, and then becoming lawmakers and passing laws that then all of us are subjugated to that kind of irresponsible thinking. So you're going to hear, for example, today, you're going to hear Elon Musk, my final warning. Now, what does that mean? That means that someone who I do not agree with on just about anything, he is telling us what's in front of us. Listen carefully what he says. Please don't have any distractions in the background because it's a little noisy where he's talking, but you've got to hear what he says is happening right now. Now, he should know because he is one of the people financing all of this artificial intelligence. About artificial intelligence, it's here. Transhumanism is here. And how's that going to impact you? It will impact you in no good way. But what if it goes too far? And what about the corporations that want to weaponize it or have the ability to? And what if they engaged in any kind of nuclear attack? A computer that could set off nuclear weapons around the world? Yes. They have artificial intelligence today that they can't control, just so you know. So it's no longer some kind of sci-fi dystopian future. It's now. It's happening. So we better let our feelings be known. But I'd like to hear what you have to feel about this. So you'll call us on TalkBack after we play it, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. That's Elon Musk. Then I had a person who said, aren't you being a little heavy on Bill Gates? I mean, he seems to be a really, decent guy. He's saving the world. I said, where did you get your information? Well, I'm aware. I he's everywhere on television. They wouldn't be having him on television if he, was not legitimate. I said, okay. I said, well, when you get home, this is from the retreat that just ended. When you get home, listen to my Monday's program, because I'm going to let Bill Gates explain to you directly, in his own words, through about 30 different lectures he's done, what he really wants, what his motivation is, where he's going, what his goal is. Not me. I'm not saying it. He's saying it. Then why didn't a single person in the media, not one person in the media, challenge him on any of these thoughts? Remember, it was the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Gavi that sponsored, with the World Health Organization that he virtually controls, those sterilizing vaccines that were given to tens of millions of women, young women, in several countries in Africa. Shouldn't that raise concerns? Is that not a moral or ethical issue that one person, one human being who has no background in science, no background in medicine, no background in public health, no background, never been elected to office, can determine the entire outcome of people's lives, whether you should or shouldn't have a child? But that's how powerful he is. So you're going to hear from Bill Gates. You're also going to hear from a person who, I don't watch the Oscars. I don't like to watch people who I don't respect in real life, though I may respect their film. I pay, to see a film. Okay, I have an opinion. I can like or not like a particular performance. Most performances I don't like, so that's why whenever I have a moment in the evening, generally, I'll watch Turner films because I like the classics better. Where they actually taught people how to act. So a guy goes on a little, writes a letter to Hollywood. Oscar ratings disaster, an open letter to Hollywood. I don't know, just a regular person. Very interesting what he has to say. And if time permits, you're going to hear a reading of an article by a person that has something to say about what we're not paying attention to when it comes to potential, a posturing with China or Russia, they could set off a nuclear confrontation. So that's our program. Let's go to the latest on health and healing. So we know that the omega-3 fatty acids are good for our heart. They're really good for the epithelium, the lining of the blood vessels, because that's where a lot of nicks and cuts and scratches inside. And then there's all kinds of, just like on the outside where you develop a scab, where you have to imagine when you have a scab inside of your arteries or veins, what happens if that breaks off? It can form a clot. So you want to heal those. You want to keep them flexible and healthy. Pomegranate does that. And beet juice does that, increases nitric oxide, which helps our circulation to the extremities in particular, to the brain, as well as to the legs and feet, but also the omega-3. Omega-3 helps our heart too. Now we've just found out that it helps kids who have an elevated cholesterol. Why is that important? Because as you elevate your cholesterol, especially the LDL, the low-density lipoprotein, you increase your risk of heart disease and stroke. And this was an article presented at the American Physiological Society's annual meeting in experimental biology. So take your omega-3 fatty acids each day, I suggest in the morning and in the evening or early evening, generally 1,000 to 1,500 milligrams each time. Vitamin B3 ameliorates amyloid beta-induced oxidative stress-mediated neuroinflammation and neurodegeneration, meaning in lay language that it helps protect your brain from free radicals and from the cytokine storms. This was done at National University in South Korea. That's very important. And so take your vitamin B3, the nicotinamide, NAM, easy to get. And there's two types. One, if you take it at a little higher doses, you'll flush, meaning your skin will get very red, very hot. But you can also get a non-flush MAN also. And it really turns off inflammation on the neurons. And that is good news for helping your brain. And adversity in early life is linked to higher risk of mental health problems. This was from University of Medicine and Health Sciences. So the new research found that childhood adversity, such as parental conflict, parents arguing, death of a close family member, or serious injury before the age of 9, was associated with a mental health problem in later life. Now, that is not inevitable, because you can have a lot of input depending upon the parents, whether they're wise enough to see that their children growing up are sponging everything. That's the only reality they know. They can't intellectualize, so they emotionalize. They absorb it, thinking it's real. They don't see you might have a difference, and tempers get a little high, and then later you make up and everything's fine. They don't know that. This was published in Psychological Medicine. So what is the takeaway message here? Well, this was looked at 6,000 children in Ireland who took part in the Growing Up in Ireland study, and the results showed that over a quarter of the children had experienced childhood adversity before the age of 9, and that really increases your rate of having problems later in life, including hyperactivity, anxiety, and depression. So for the adults, when you're around children, just remember, think before you emote, think before you overreact, think before you get angry and raise your voice, because the child doesn't know how to process it. And that becomes part of their epigenetic conditioned self. If you have post-traumatic stress disorder, which millions of people do, according to George Washington University, one of the things you can do is take orange essential oil. That's correct. About 8%, according to George Washington University, of people will develop post-traumatic stress disorder at some point in their lives. That's according to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Yet treatments for this debilitating condition, in my opinion, are atrocious. They're a crime against people. Why? Because every 24 hours in the United States, a former or current vet will kill themselves, as often as not, just putting a gun in their mouth and blowing their brains out. Well, they were almost all were under treatment, either while they were still active or after activity through the Veterans Administration. Here's the problem. No one is looking at the psychological, psychiatric, and mental health approaches, and we've gotten it all wrong. So wrong that we are contributing with the Prozacs and all of the antidepressants and all of the antipsychotic medication. Look at the side effects. The side effect for a person who is diagnosed with acute anxiety, they take a drug. The drug's number one side effect, acute anxiety. A person's depressed, they take a drug for depression. The number one side effect in the package insert, depression. So when are we going to allow some adults in the room instead of spokespersons for the pharmaceutical industry who don't give a whit about whether or not people die or not? They just keep pumping these toxic drugs. Well, if you know that akathisia, or if you know suicidal ideation, or if you know that excessive psychotic episodes or paranoid delusional episodes come from taking a particular drug, does it make sense to keep giving that drug for the rest of their life? And that's what's happening. Now, this is something I know well because I've done veterans health support groups. I've helped a lot of vets. And I got them off the drugs and got them help in ways that are natural, non-toxic, including with my friends like Dr. Donald Mullen, Dr. Lane Kahn, Dr. Alan Putterman, and many others who used more humanistic psychotherapy and psychoanalysis. And that's what helps. Plus, then you detoxify their body and you rebuild their brain of the nutrients it's deficient in. And suddenly you got a person that's making a difference. Even just giving a person a rescue animal. For example, there's a place in Florida. It's just about a block from where I live. And there's a place in Colorado. There might be other places. I'm just not familiar with them. But it's really neat to see what they do. Vets or people suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, not just vets, they go there and these wolves will go over and bond with the wolf selects the person. It's like they're picking up on the energy. And that's when these vets just chill out and smile and are happy. And we should be doing a lot more using different animals so that the vet can feel unconditional love and joy and nurturing with that. And then look at what's really wrong with the vet and try to help them. Well, I think one of the things that would help all the vets is that if we took the same time to decommission them, even longer than we did conditioning them to be able to go into a war zone and either see something that's happened. That caught, by the way, that's the majority of the people I work with. They didn't commit an act that they didn't kill someone or beat someone up or take someone to Abu Ghraib and degrade them, but they witnessed it. And because it's the military, they were powerless to do anything about it. They're not the generals. And that haunts them. Why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do that? And so that's where having the person sit with someone, do tapping therapy, work with them, the wonderful words of Dr. Peter Resnick, who's worked with people with post-traumatic stress disorder and others. But we're not doing that. But if we did that, and then we built housing for them, had a whole veterans village, and so that vets who've experienced different things in common, even if they've been in different operational theaters, they can go there and get the humanistic, holistic therapy and get their lives back. Then they're able to reenter society. That's what we should be doing. I'm doing that as we speak. In fact, in a few weeks, I'll be opening up the doors. It's done. I just had to wait for the anti-aging study to finish up, which is finishing in 2 weeks. Some spectacular results, by the way. I mean, breathtaking results. Anyhow, the orange essential oil can help alleviate the post-traumatic stress disorder. All right? Quote, relative to pharmaceuticals, essential oils are much more economical and do not have adverse side effects. The orange essential oil, the orange essential plant oil showed a significant effect on the behavioral response in our study. This is in laboratory mice. This is promising because it shows that passively inhaling this essential oil could potentially assuage post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms in humans. Now, by the way, I'm sure many of you use essential oils. They're the aromatic compounds produced naturally by plants. And in fact, on one of our people, after 2 weeks, this is not a person who's in shape. This is kind of fun. This person goes out and goes for a walk in the rain, and it was not a warm rain. And I'm looking out and seeing, we have five nurses, a medical doctor, even though this is not needed. I said, just keep an eye, make sure they're hydrated, and just see however far they want to go, 2 miles, 3 miles. This person went 26 miles, a full marathon at a fast pace. And I said, how'd you do it? Person said, well, at about the 20-mile mark, I was starting to feel fatigued, but then I'd walk by the roses, and I would inhale the aromatic essence of the roses, and it would just pick me right back up again. We got thousands and thousands of roses blooming right now. Well, orange is one of those pick-me-ups. Lavender is one that calms you down. So why not bring some of these into your life and just put a couple drops, just two drops on a pillow if you want to get a better night's sleep of lavender. Put a couple drops into a bath. And suddenly that aromatherapy you're breathing in is great. Also, exercise reduces the risk of airway disease. This is from Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital, published in the peer-reviewed journal Radiology. And what it's saying is that exercise appears to reduce the long-term risk of inflamed bronchial and potentially serious disease of the airways. And that's where, you know, repeated cycles of inflammation and exacerbations that damage the airways, leaving them enlarged, scarred, and less effective at clearing mucus. And this creates an environment ripe for infections. But exercise helps reduce that. So let's get our exercise in all the time. I suggest 3 hours a week. Also, from Georgia State University comes a study that processed diets, by the way, in my opinion, the diets that are making a lot of money for the people in the companies, I would never advocate one of those diets. Yeah, you can lose weight, but you're not doing it in a healthy way. Food's not healthy, in my opinion. Well, Georgia State University also agrees that processed diets might promote chronic infections that can lead to disorders such as diabetes, meaning that processed diets, which allow a low in fiber but initially reduce the incidence of foodborne infection diseases like E. coli infections, but might also increase the incidence of diseases characterized by low-grade chronic infection and inflammation like diabetes. That's a good one. So you want to stay away from all of these processed diets. All right, high in fat, high in sugar, they're really not good for you, and they really disrupt the bacteria. And one last study from the Mayo Clinic. You've heard me talk about telomeres, T-E-L-O-M-E-R-E. They found that sleeplessness is associated with telomere shortening. So when you don't get a good night's sleep, your telomeres shorten. Why is that important? Because that speeds up your life and you die sooner, much sooner. Because telomeres protect DNA from biological stressors, and shortened telomeres are associated with multiple cardiovascular diseases. And so get a good night's sleep, and that way you don't shorten your telomeres. We are 22 minutes into our program. All this week I'm going to give a little homage to the 1950s and early 60s. For those of you old enough, baby boomers like myself, to remember this music as we grew up as kids, just a little walk down memory lane. And when we come back, we're going to go to Elon Musk's, quote, "my final warning." And why isn't this being debated? This is a very important issue. Why is this not front and center with the pros and cons of what will happen when artificial intelligence takes over? And we're right there right now. Now, if you go to prn.fm and scroll down, you can see the video and the background B-roll, because it's actually showing you the different artificial intelligence and what they're doing. And they took all other artificial intelligence, which had already beat any human, for example, in chess. And now the new artificial intelligence can beat all other artificial intelligence. That means that it has the capacity to think. Back in a moment.
The biggest issue I see with so-called AI experts is that they think they know more than they do. And they think they're smarter than they actually are. In general, we are all much smarter than we think we are, but much less smart, dumber than we think we are, by a lot. So this tends to plague smart people. They just can't. They define themselves by their intelligence, and they don't like the idea that a machine could be way smarter than them. So they discount the idea, which is fundamentally flawed. That's the wishful thinking situation. I'm really quite close to. I'm very close to the cutting edge in AI, and it scares the hell out of me. It's capable of vastly more than almost anyone knows. And the rate of improvement is exponential. You can see this in things like AlphaGo, which went from, in the span of maybe 6 to 9 months, it went from being unable to beat even a reasonably good Go player, to then beating the European world champion, who was ranked 600, then beating Lisa Doll 4-5, who had been world champion for many years, then beating the current world champion, then beating everyone while playing simultaneously. Then there was AlphaZero, which crushed AlphaGo 100-0. And AlphaZero just learned by playing itself, and it can play basically any game that you put the rules in for. If you whatever rules you give it, it literally read the rules, play the game, and be superhuman for any game. Nobody expected that rate of improvement. If you ask those same experts who think AI is not progressing at the rate that I'm saying, I think you will find that their predictions for things like Go and other AI advancements have their batting average is quite weak. It's not good. We'll see this also with self-driving. NHTSA did a study on Tesla's Autopilot version 1, which is relatively primitive, and found that it was a 45% reduction in highway accidents. And that's despite Autopilot 1 being just version 1. So the rate of improvement is really dramatic. I think that's the single biggest existential crisis that we face, and the most pressing one. I'm not normally an advocate of regulation and oversight. I mean, I think one should generally err on the side of minimizing those things. But this is a case where you have a very serious danger to the public. And so therefore, there needs to be a public body that has insight and then oversight on to confirm that everyone is developing AI safely. This is extremely important. I think the danger of AI is much greater than the danger of nuclear warheads by a lot. And nobody would suggest that we allow anyone to just build nuclear warheads if they want. That would be insane. And mark my words, AI is far more dangerous than nukes. Far. So why do we have no regulatory oversight? This is insane. I'm not really all that worried about the short-term stuff. Things that are... like narrow AI is not a species-level risk. It will result in dislocation, in lost jobs, and the sort of better weaponry and that kind of thing. But it is not a fundamental species-level risk, whereas digital superintelligence is. So it's really all about laying the groundwork to make sure that if humanity collectively decides that creating digital superintelligence is the right move, then we should do so very, very carefully. Very, very carefully. This is the most important thing that we could possibly do. Well, I mean, there are other things that are on a longer time scale. And obviously the things that I believe in, like extending life beyond Earth, making life multiplanetary. I'm a big believer in sort of Asimov's Foundation series, or the principle that you really want to, I recommend reading the Foundation series, but it's like if you know that there's likely to be, well, you don't know, but there's likely to be another Dark Ages, which it seems, my guess is there probably will be at some point. I'm not predicting that we're about to enter Dark Ages, but that there's some probability that we will, particularly if there's a Third World War. Then we want to make sure that there's enough of a seed of human civilization somewhere else to bring civilization back and perhaps shorten the length of the Dark Ages. I think that's why it's important to get a self-sustaining base, ideally on Mars, because Mars is far enough away from Earth that a war on Earth, the Mars base might survive. It's more likely to survive than a moon base. But I think a moon base and a Mars base that could perhaps help regenerate life back here on Earth would be really important, and to get that done before a possible World War III. Last century we had two massive world wars, three if you count the Cold War. I think it's unlikely that we will never have another World War again. There probably will be at some point. Yeah, it just could be radioactive rubble. Again, I'm not predicting. It just seems like, well, if you say given enough time, will it be most likely? Given enough time, this has been our pattern in the past. But I think sustainable energy is also obviously really important. That's tautological. If it's not sustainable, it's unsustainable. Well, I think the core technologies are there with the wind, solar, with batteries. The fundamental problem is that there's an unpriced externality in the cost of CO2. The market economics works very well if things are priced correctly, but when things are not priced correctly, and something that has a real cost has zero cost, then that's where you get distortions in the market that inhibit the progress of other technologies. So, essentially, anything that produces carbon, it will push carbon into the atmosphere, which includes rockets, by the way. So I'm not excluding rockets from this. There has to be a price. And that you can start off with a low price, but then that price, and then depending upon whether that price has any effect on the parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere, you can adjust that price up or down. But in the absence of a price, we sort of pretend that digging trillions of tons of fossil fuels from deep under the earth and putting it into the atmosphere, we're pretending that has no probability of a bad outcome. And the entire scientific community is saying, obviously, it's going to have a bad outcome. Obviously, you're changing the chemical constituents of the atmosphere. So it's really up to people and governments to put a price on carbon, and then automatically the right thing happens. It's really straightforward.
No, it's not straightforward. And Elon, I would hope that at some point you come out of your little billionaire man cave and speak with those of us who may be a little more grounded in reality because we're not surrounded by sycophants. And one example, a study came out last week showing that all the carbon purchases did nothing, zero, to lessen carbon emissions. Let me just explain how this works. For big polluters, like the Koch brothers' industries, all their industries, all the major industries, all the oil industries, they can, through this plan of trading in carbon offsets, they can buy them. So therefore, that money is supposed to go to someone else who's not polluting a lot. But none of this stops pollution. It's merely an exchange of currency. It's insane. We should not be doing this. The only way to address global warming is to have a worldwide discussion of which industries must retool immediately, and for those that must close, find gainful work so you don't have a mass amount of people thrown out of work. And there's a lot of other industries that we could be doing this with. For example, in West Virginia, they're doing hydroponics and other types of food which allow a person to live and thrive in a non-toxic environment, because coal is very toxic. That's where you get your black lung. As in cotton, you get your brown lung. So this way, you're not upsetting the economy. You're actually strengthening the economy, but you stop the pollution. And yet, who are the three biggest polluters in the world? China, the United States, and India. And who's growing nonstop? China, United States, and India. So which of those countries are going to say, we've got to cut back on these major 10 industries? How about none? Zero. Not a single thing is being done, planned to be done. It's all smoke and mirrors. You're being lied to. And here's the likely outcome. This is just in about an hour ago from Harvard University. Quote, Antarctic ice sheet melting to lift sea level higher than thought. New calculations show the rise due to warming would be 30% above forecast. And by the way, that's without considering what happens when Greenland is melting. Greenland is also melting very fast. So no one is dealing with this, even though all the projections show we've got to start making changes. We're way behind that curve, but we're not. We talk about it. And oh, one of the things Elon was saying about artificial intelligence, understand, once any artificial intelligence is created that can think for itself, how long do you think that artificial intelligence is going to stay passive and supportive? You already heard him say one can beat another artificial intelligence, the previous best, by 100 times. And what if it decided to release, and it could, the grid is all interconnected, remember now, so the 5G connects the Internet of all things, so it decides to stop all computers. Well, what about if you're in an airplane and those are all computer run? Yeah. What if they stop all of the refrigeration in a heat storm? You have no idea the concept. But also my big concern is nuclear. He said it, I'll say it again, nuclear. And we're going to, I don't know if we'll have time today, but if we find a clip that on what well, we do have the clip, so we're going to play this clip. This clip is from an article. Just listen to it. It's not that long. And then you can call in with your thoughts on how we're going pell-mell towards artificial intelligence. And I told you about transhumanism. This is just in from Metro United Kingdom. Quote, U.S. Space Force scientist says military, quote, human augmentation, end quote, is necessary in the next decade. Quote, the chief scientist for the newly created U.S. Space Force, that's the one Vice President Harris is overseeing, and you see all the academic and professional background she has in aeronautics, whoa, has said he thinks, quote, human augmentation will be here sooner than later. Dr. Joel Moser, speaking at an event at the Air Force Research Laboratory, said that it is, quote, imperative that the U.S. outdo its adversaries by leading in human augmentation in military technology. That means taking American soldiers and genetically in also with artificial intelligence, including implants in the brain and the spine, etc., make them super soldiers with no pain. And well, we've actually seen sci-fi films. Now, I told you, transhumanism is here. Nobody makes an announcement like that unless it's already ready. They're gauging the public reaction to it. Now let's hear about what's wrong with the media not covering anything about nuclear. Wasn't it Barack Obama who won a Nobel Peace Prize and then went on to undermine seven other countries' sovereign regimes? But, oh, he was against nuclear. Then he became for nuclear. Then he added a $1.5 trillion to upgrade our nuclear. Everyone in the Beltway was happy about that. But we already had thousands of nuclear warheads. And we spend billions of dollars stockpiling and protecting them. Well, what happens when someone, including artificial intelligence, can release those or decides by accident to release one? And that's entirely possible, especially now where you have people who will do anything to maintain power. Listen up.
The day the world ended. The day the world ended began like any other day. People woke up, had their coffee, checked their social media, kissed their loved ones, went to work. Nobody knew it was coming. The news reporters and pundits hadn't been informing them that the U.S. and its allies had been simultaneously ramping up aggressions against two nuclear-armed nations in a way that could easily lead to something going catastrophically wrong, or explain to them what this could mean for them and their loved ones. The mass media had never let the truth interfere with the military agendas of their government before, and, as it turns out, they never would. Nobody knew it was coming, so nobody opposed the dangerous acts of brinkmanship that led up to it. Nobody resisted as the Democrats manufactured consent for escalation after escalation against Russia. Nobody resisted as the Republicans manufactured consent for escalation after escalation against China. Nobody objected as warships were moved, as troops were deployed, as nuclear posture reviews became more and more hawkish and aggressive, as new Armageddon weapons were manufactured and fielded, as proxy conflicts were backed, as warplanes encroached upon sovereign airspace, as missiles were readied for swift deployment. So it simply did not feature in anyone's mind that this could be the day they and their loved ones die in a nuclear holocaust. They just went about their day, like it was any other day, working, texting, thinking pointless thoughts, arguing about nonsense with strangers on the internet. Then it happened. A nuclear weapon was deployed by one side, setting off a chain reaction that had been set in place, ready to be triggered long ago, from which there was no coming back. And the funny thing is, it was an accident. Just a stupid, innocent mistake. One of the thousands of people responsible for the operation of those horrific weapons got a little careless with their part in the day-to-day management of the imperfect technology used in an international nuclear standoff that had become increasingly tense and confusing amid rapidly rising Cold War chaos. That's all it took. Nothing grand or dramatic, just a bad decision made at the wrong time. 1 minute it seemed fine, the next minute it was the end of everything. Nothing rearranges your mental priorities like looking outside and seeing a mushroom cloud growing on the horizon. Suddenly, your particular political ideology doesn't feel so significant anymore. Your personal beef with your coworker loses its importance. The heated argument you are having online slips forgotten from your mind. In fact, nearly everything you'd spent your mental energy on that day up until that point feels like a ridiculous, pathetic joke. There was fear, of course. Panic, of course. People ran. People hid. But the realization spread very quickly that there was no escaping this one. That this was the end. And in that brief moment of helpless surrender to the inevitable, humanity was the most awake it's ever been. The most alert, the most tuned in, the most compassionate, the most loving. If there had been anyone outside of it to witness it, the beauty of our species would have taken their breath away. The earth shook. The flames spread. Black carbon was hurled into the stratosphere for decades. All the Earth's creatures perished in the darkness and radiation. And then it was all still. still and silent. It was a mistake. A stupid, silly mistake. Just like all the other stupid, silly mistakes we've made since the moment we first stood upright. It's just that this mistake was our last one. The only difference between our final mistake and all the innumerable others which preceded it was that there was nobody left to fix this one. To try and course correct. To say, ah, I see where you went wrong there. Let's make some adjustments and try a different approach. No one left to recognize the mistake, to grow as a result of that recognition, and to rise above it. No one to realize how staggeringly insane it was to flirt with the end of the world for the sake of power, how arrogant it was to think that we could remain in perfect control of those weapons for decades on end without something going wrong amid our reckless games of nuclear chicken. No one to realize there's no good reason we need to live in a world where governments brandish such weapons at each other just because a few sociopaths decided that U.S. unipolar domination needs to be preserved at all cost. No one to realize we could all just lay down our weapons and get along with each other and begin collaborating with each other toward a peaceful and harmonious world. It would be so, so wonderful if that had happened. But it didn't. And now it's all gone. And it's too late to fix our mistake.
That was a essay by Ketelyn Johnstone and a brilliant piece. Thank you for that contribution. We're now going to go to In His Own Words. This is Bill Gates explaining what he wants to do in the world, and he has the power, and he's bought enough people at every level of the United States government, Congress, all the major scientific institutions, all the major universities, the World Health Organization, the CDC, the FDA, Anthony Fauci. He controls them all. So what's his end game? What's his motive? Listen carefully. Now, in about 9 minutes, we're going to have to say goodbye to WBAI for the day. They do their news, so we're going to say goodbye. But everyone who wants to continue listening, I'm going to play this right up to the end. Then you'll have a chance to give your feedback by Elmer Talkback Line, 888-874-4888. Now to Bill Gates. Mind you, this is about 20 different clips, so don't say words were put into his mouth. He just can't stop from words coming out of his mouth, and no one criticizes any of the ethics, legality, or the morals of what he's saying.
It really grabbed me as urgent were issues related to population.
In 1998, Dr. Zabin became the founding director of the Bill and Melinda Gates Institute for Population Control.
Dr. Zabin became the founding director of the Bill and Melinda Gates Institute for Population Control.
We see a lot of things that are going very well, things like reducing childhood death and... First, we've got population. Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
The problem is that the population is growing the fastest where people are less able to deal with it. So it's in the very poorest places that you're going to have a tripling in population by 2050. And so their ability to feed, educate, provide jobs, stability, protect the environment in those locations mean they're faced with an almost impossible problem. Here we can see a chart that looks at the total world population over the last several hundred years. And at first glance, this is a bit scary. We go from less than a billion in 1800, and then 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.4 billion, where we are today, is happening even faster. So Melinda and I wondered whether providing new medicines and keeping children alive, would that create more of a population problem?
And what the developing world does not need is more children.
And I think that was the biggest aha to Bill and me when we got into this work, is we asked ourselves, of course, the same hard-nosed question you'd ask, which is, if you get into this work and you start to save these children, will women just keep overpopulating the world? And thank goodness the converse is absolutely true.
This is a very important question to get right, because it was absolutely key for me. When our foundation first started up, it was focused on reproductive health. That was the main thing we did, because I thought, you know, population growth in poor countries is the biggest problem they face. You've got to help mothers who want to limit family size have the tools and education to do that. And I thought that's the only thing that really counts. Is spending $1 million on that last 3 months of life for that patient, would it be better not to lay off those 10 teachers and to make that trade-off in medical costs? But that's called the death panel. And you're not supposed to have that discussion.
But that's called the death panel, and you're not supposed to have that discussion.
Behind closed doors on this New York campus, a secret gathering of some of the world's most powerful people. Gates, Buffett, Bloomberg, Winfrey. It was like, well, it was like the Super Friends. Together with others at the meeting, including George Soros, Ted Turner, David Rockefeller, they're worth more than $125 billion.
That much money, that much power around one table. It begs the question, what were they doing? What were they scheming? Total world domination?
This group, together for 6 hours, was talking about charity, education, emergency relief, global health, the new Superman and Wonder Woman, the super rich friends, not fighting bad guys, but fighting for good nonetheless.
Apparently, one of the things they discussed was what each of them knows about what really works and what doesn't work, so they can concentrate their resources.
An epidemic, either naturally caused or intentionally caused, is the most likely thing to cause, say, 10 million excess deaths. Today, the greatest risk of global catastrophe doesn't look like this. Instead, it looks like this. If anything kills over 10 million people in the next few decades, it's most likely to be a highly infectious virus rather than a war. So let's look at each one of these and see how we can get this down to zero. Probably one of these numbers is going to have to get pretty near to zero. That's back from high school algebra. But let's take a look.
Probably one of these numbers is going to have to get pretty near to zero.
Now, malaria's, of course, transmitted by mosquitoes. I brought some here so you could experience this. We'll let those roam around the auditorium a little bit. There. There's no reason only poor people should have the experience.
But did you come to reproductive issues as an intellectual?
When I was growing up, my parents were always involved in various volunteer things. My dad was head of Planned Parenthood, and it was very controversial to be involved with that.
My dad was head of Planned Parenthood.
The ultimate solution, the only thing that really lets us go back completely to normal and feel good about sitting in a stadium with lots of other people, is to create a vaccine and not just take care of our country, but take that vaccine out to the global population.
Take that vaccine out to the global population.
We clearly need a vaccine that works in the upper age range, because they're most at risk of that. And doing that so that you amp it up so it works in older people and yet you don't have side effects. You know, if we have, you know, 1 in 10,000 side effects, that's, you know, way more, 700,000 you know, people who will suffer from that.
Way more, 700,000 you know, people who will suffer from that.
The side effects for the Moderna vaccine sound concerning. We looked. After the second dose, at least 80% of participants experienced a systemic side effect, ranging from severe chills to fevers. So are these vaccines safe?
Well, the FDA, not being pressured, will look hard at that. The FDA is the gold standard of regulators, and their current guidance on this, if they stick with that, is very, very appropriate. And, you know, the side effects were not super severe. That is, it didn't cause permanent health problems for the things there. They, you know, Moderna did have to go with a fairly high dose. And so, you know, to get the antibodies, some of the other vaccines are going able to go with lower doses to get responses that are pretty high, including the J&J and the Pfizer. And so there's a lot of characteristics of these vaccines. It's great that we have multiple of them that
but
are
Bill,
going out there. And yes, I think
you know the data better than I do. But the Bill, the data showed that everybody with a high dose had a side effect.
Yeah, but some of that is not dramatic, where, you know, it's just, you know, super painful. But yes, there we need to make sure there's not severe side effects. The FDA, I think, will do a good job of that, despite the pressure.
From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Monday, May 3rd. Here are some headlines. Relatives, friends, and activists attended a public viewing of Andrew Brown Jr.'s open casket on Sunday ahead of a funeral scheduled for today, 2 weeks after he was shot to death outside his Elizabeth City, North Carolina home by deputies serving search and arrest warrants. About 300 demonstrators marched to an auditorium at the Museum of Albemarle, where Brown's casket was moved after the earlier viewing at a funeral home. Officials have said Brown's shooting was justified, but protesters have gathered every night since the April 21st shooting, calling it an example of excessive force by police against black people. Protesters are also calling for authorities to release all the deputies' body camera video of the incident. The Pentagon has begun the process of canceling contracts for border wall construction that used funds diverted from other Defense Department accounts by the Trump administration. Trump diverted about $10 billion from military construction accounts and Carter narcotics programs to pay for hundreds of miles of steel barriers along the Mexico border, an effort that Biden had denounced as wasteful and ineffective. A Biden administration official said in a statement that to the extent possible, what remains of the more than $14 billion tied up in border wall projects would be restored for use as Congress intended. In a separate statement Friday, the Department of Homeland Security said it would use congressionally appropriated funds to repair flood levees in the lower Rio Grande Valley that were damaged during border wall construction. And the United States will begin reuniting migrant children with their parents this week after they were separated by the administration of former President Trump, Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas said today. Four families that were separated at the Mexico border will be reunited in the United States this week in what Secretary Mayorkas says is just the beginning of a broader effort that will stretch on for months and possibly years, as separated parents are brought back to the United States from around the world. More than 1,000 families remain apart, according to the Department of Homeland Security. The parents were deported alone, mostly to Central America, in 2017 or 2018. Their children have since grown up, with relatives across the United States. Immigrant advocates welcomed the announcement today, but expressed frustration at the slow pace of reunification. The Environmental Protection Agency is taking a major step today to battle climate change with the former proposal of a rule phasing down the use of planet-warming gases called hydrofluorocarbons, which are used in air conditioning and refrigeration. The reduction will decrease HFC production and